If you think like, act like, or are trying to grow like a franchise, then the Franchise Euphoria podcast is for you. Hello and welcome, everybody. Josh Brown here, and I created this podcast for one main goal: to help people who are trying to grow their business through franchising or franchise-like structures. I've been practicing law now as a franchise lawyer for many, many years, and I've seen it done the right way and the wrong way. This podcast is not filled with a bunch of legal mumbo-jumbo. Rather, I talk with real people, people who have been there, have done it, are doing it right now. And I also dive deep into specific topics related to franchising. So if this is of interest to you, you are at the right place. So on this third and final interview on part three of this new series I'm doing on this show on what it takes to really scale and grow and create an enduring franchise system, I am thrilled to spend some time with Jim Donnelly. Jim right now is the CEO at Restore, which is a super fast growing franchise that I was fortunate enough to help him with a few years back. But in 2001, Jim co-founded iGoYouGo.com, winner of a Webby Award as the top travel website in the U.S. In under 5 years, iGoYouGo became the leader in user-generated content for travel websites and was sold to Sabre Holdings Travelocity. Since then, Jim has worked on a variety of companies designed to improve the life and lifestyle of like-minded people. With a focus in the luxury retail market, Jim has developed luxury condos for homeowners, including Michael Jordan, Cam Newton, and Chris Daughtry, as well as salons, spas, and high-end health clubs, including the Charlotte Athletic Club. The accumulation of these experiences has led to the creation of Restore, a fast-growing franchise. Restore is a company born of personal necessity and societal need. Pain management, longevity, and performance optimization are important societal issues calling for new, healthier, and more convenient options. As a former athlete, Jim experienced the same aches and pains of other 40-plus year olds that have been injured and continue to push themselves with a variety of fitness challenges. So he became enamored with this idea of hyper wellness and modalities like whole body cryotherapy and IV therapy and hyperbaric oxygen therapy and infrared sauna therapy and all sorts of stuff with hard names to pronounce that really has had a tremendous impact, not only for professional athletes, but for a lot of people across the United States. Restore was recently named 113 on the prestigious Inc. 5000 list. That's 113 on the Inc. 5000 list as one of the fastest growing private companies in the U.S. Jim is an awesome dude. I really like him. He's smart, he's savvy, and he's an operator that moves fast, but moves with purpose and really focuses on the data and really focuses on the technology and the systems in order to scale the right way. So I cannot think of a better person to have on to complete this circle on what an enduring franchise system is all about. Really hope you enjoy this deep dive I take with Jim Donnelly. Jim Donnelly, how the heck are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So first and foremost, so obviously you're from Texas. You were able to get out of there right now, right? Amidst the blizzard?
Yeah. So I was skiing in Colorado and about 4 days ago tried to fly back to Austin. Couldn't. So was stranded in a hotel in Salt Lake City for 4 days and just got to Dallas a couple hours ago. So I'm not home yet, but I'm close.
Well, that's good. Well, thanks for taking the time to jump on here with me, of course, because obviously I know traveling and doing all that, that's a lot to take on. So, you know, I thought of you, Jim, because what you as CEO and what your team has done with Restore Hyper Wellness and cryotherapy is really quite remarkable. I mean, you started that business in 2015, right?
Yep, 5 years ago.
5 years ago. And if I've got my stats correct, we're looking at, according to Inc. magazine, the number one hottest franchise business in America, according to number 17 on the Inc. 5000 for fastest growing private companies in Texas, and number 113 on the Inc. 5000 fastest growing companies in America. That's pretty fantastic.
No, it's cool. It's very cool. It's a testament to we're on the right track. We've got a great team. We're pretty passionate about what we do. It's the right idea for the right time.
Yeah. And I mean, you've got a background in tech and in working with businesses, right? I mean, in scaling businesses.
Yeah. I mean, I've had multiple successful exits, variety of different companies. I consider myself a serial entrepreneur. Have definitely had some pretty prominent companies. I guess prior to Restore, my biggest claim to fame would probably be iGo YouGo, which was the world's largest online travel community at one point.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I sold that to Travelocity and Sabre Holdings about 11 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fascinating. I think that, you know, one of the things that strikes me as sort of a core area, a core strength of yours is scaling a business, being able to take something, take a concept, start it, and grow it. You know, I'd be curious to just kind of talk about, you know, and break down, sort of deconstruct the idea of scaling a business and what that really looks like. And I think when you start, or when you're looking at the notion of scaling a business, the first thing is you got to figure out what business you're getting into and how to even start it and get it off on the right foot. I mean, right? I mean, isn't that just sort of a basic notion?
Yeah. You know, when we first started Restore, we didn't know how big it was going to be or certainly how much time we were going to put into it. I was training for a triathlon. I was really sore. I was training with my now business partner, Steve Welch. On a lark, I went and tried cryotherapy. It made me feel great. I loved the modality, but I hated everything about the experience. I hated the location. I hated the owner. I hated the pricing. It was incredibly overpriced. So, you know, I thought, well, I can do this better. And that was really the seed of everything was there was this thing that existed. It wasn't done very well. We could do it better. Yeah, that's kind of the seed of it. But Steve and I weren't interested in a lifestyle business. We were interested in something that would be pretty transformational. Transformational for society, transformational for us personally. And that's what kind of motivated us to take it to the next level.
Yeah. I mean, when you've got this concept, and obviously you guys did the research into it, right? I mean, you looked into what was there. You knew firsthand. I mean, you're sitting there yourself and saying, gosh, I really like this. I need this, but there's a better way to do it. And you jump in and you obviously worked with Steve and partnered up with Steve. But did you ever have the idea from the get-go that you were going to scale this thing as fast as you have?
Well, you know, we had this sort of anecdotal personal experience, which was great. And then we did have access to some really great information. So, you know, Steve was running Dream Adventures at that time. So we had access to everything that McKinsey, BCG, all those guys were putting out about health and wellness and trends in the wellness space. So we knew that it was something that had potential, then it was just a matter of execution. This was an idea that a bunch of different big things were coming together at the same time. So first of all, the way that people were paying for their healthcare was changing dramatically. So household deductibles on their health insurance now average $8,000 a family. So whether you want to or not, you're paying for your healthcare.
That's cheap, man. I wish I could only pay $8,000.
Well, you probably must have a big family then.
I do.
You must be Catholic or Mormon, no, or something like that.
I'm Jewish, man. I'm Jewish, okay. But I've got three daughters and my wife, and I'm saying $8,000, man. I'd love to pay that.
So yeah, so that's the average. If you have a nicer plan, it's more. So when you're actually paying for things, you pay a little more attention to them. And so the secret of Restore is people use Restore as a way to stay healthy and prevent the big illnesses that are going to cost them a lot of money. So we knew that was happening. There was also this interesting dynamic in that every sort of cohort of ages was spending money on wellness and anti-aging at the same level. So it's pretty amazing that millennials spend just as much money on anti-aging as baby boomers.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And then the last thing that was happening was this amazing set of breakthroughs around aging. And so 10 years ago, the conventional wisdom was that aging was inevitable. The new science is indicating that if we can address the different causes of aging, we could theoretically treat aging as a disease state. And if you can treat something like a disease state, you could theoretically cure it one day. So all of these really big, interesting things are happening at the same time, and all of them are very supportive of a business like Restore. So we definitely went into it thinking that we had a big idea. We did a bunch of A/B testing. We put locations in different kinds of locations, different demographic groups, different size locations. And no matter what we did, we couldn't break the model. And so that was, once again, another pretty big indicator that we were onto something big at the time.
Yeah. And, you know, you started off with obviously one location, and then it led to 2, 3, and 4 in the Texas area. When did you get the sense that this had national options? I mean, that this had scalability nationally?
Yeah. So Texas was pretty easy, and Austin's a pretty progressive state, certainly from a health perspective. And then Houston's a big city. So like you said, we pretty early on knew that would work. We tried it in Charlotte, North Carolina as well. Charlotte's another big city, but it's definitely a different type city than Austin, Texas is. And I own the Charlotte Athletic Club there, which is a big health club. So I had a little bit of infrastructure on the ground. And Charlotte performed the same way as Houston, the same way as Austin. So that was a pretty good indicator. But we didn't really know how big it was going to be and how fast it was going to spread till we started franchising 3 years ago. So once again, we started in Texas. We did our first franchise in Plano. And then some of the next franchisees that came to us were in interesting places. So they were in Little Rock. They were in Salt Lake City. They were in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They were in Westport, Connecticut. So then you started to really get into some interesting, diverse locations. And if it could work in those four locations, it could theoretically work anywhere. You had a big city. You had a sort of a quirky location in Lancaster, which is probably best known for its Amish population. Little Rock would hardly be considered the most progressive location from a health perspective. You know, Salt Lake City is a decent-sized city, but not super huge. Virginia Beach was another early city, so decent-sized metro area, but certainly not a place that's known for its progressive approach to health and wellness. So the funny thing was that every one of the locations performed the same. So they had the same types of customers, same numbers of customers. And the underlying insight was that we were ultimately treating people with chronic conditions that led to pain. And if you can help people with their pain, it doesn't matter where you are, your business is going to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure it was interesting too, that, you know, as you continue to expand, you're probably, you know, seeing demands in places where you thought, huh, this is wild. I would have never thought that this kind of concept would work there.
Well, we used to always say, if this thing works in Lancaster, it'll work anywhere. And once again, that's not me denigrating Lancaster, Pennsylvania, but once again, it's a bedroom community of, you know, outside of Philadelphia. It's best known for its Amish population. You know, it's away from the big city a little bit. And it did work. It was fabulously successful there. That particular franchisee is a very good operator. They've now expanded into several additional locations in the Philadelphia area. And once again, Philadelphia, I get it. Lancaster was one that really opened our eyes. Little Rock did as well. Like I said, Arkansas was not where we intended to sort of open one of our first locations, but we had a great franchise partner there, and they've gone on to open several locations as well. You know, we've got locations now in places like Rogers, Arkansas, Lubbock, Texas. We're essentially all over the country at this point. Durango, Colorado, just places that you just wouldn't have expected something like this to work. But it goes back to our mission. Our mission is to democratize hyper wellness. Hyper wellness is our category that we've trademarked. Hyper wellness has four characteristics. Number one, your customers feel better right away. Number two, it's supported by science and medical studies. Number three, it's democratizable, i.e., we could make it affordable and accessible for everyone, not just rich people and pro athletes. And then finally, everything we do is scalable and efficient so that we can get high throughput through our locations and it'll feel the same no matter where you are in the country. And when you start to have a construct like that and this sort of democratization idea works, you can really put a Restore anywhere at that point. And that's what's led to it being one of the hottest franchise concepts in the country and one of the best businesses in the country.
Yeah. And you guys, you know, as I mentioned earlier, have scaled super fast. And I know there's differing opinions on how fast you scale, you know, and I think obviously what you guys have done has worked and worked well. Did you go in thinking that within 5-6 years, we're going to have over 50 locations and be growing this thing like wildfire? Or did you realize that after, you know, one success after the next, and then it built a little bit of inertia that then sprung you forward?
Yeah, I mean, Steve and I are definitely data-driven guys. You know, we continue to look at the data, and the data told us that if you put the location in a relatively smart place, i.e. enough people, a relatively decent amount of income, not super high income, but decent income, and then you look for some retail markers that you were going to be around, that it was relatively easy to find locations for these places. Now, relatively easy to find them was one thing. Actually going and signing leases and getting all the nitrogen requirements taken care of and all the other things that go into building out a space, that's an entirely different story. What we looked like back in the old days versus what we look like now are incredibly different. So it was really a mad dash to put all of the things in place that allow us to scale. Back in the day, it was, you know, 4 or 5 people working their butts off 7 days a week, cranking out the work that was required to open, you know, 3-4 locations every couple of months. You know, now we're 120 people. We have a construction team. We have a real estate team. We have a equipment team. We have a training marketing team. You know, we have an accounting, finance, legal team. So today, our ability to really run fast is a function of the fact that we have built an organization that is supporting a rocket ship type of business. Back in the day, you know, it was really hard work on top of a really good concept.
Now, to build out that infrastructure, obviously, I love what you talk about with the data, because I truly believe that all franchises need to really focus more on data, candidly. I mean, sometimes they just operate off of their feelings, right? Hey, I think it's going to work here. It's like, yeah, I don't think that's a good way to do it.
Now, listen, in the beginning, we did the Burger King approach, you know, i.e. if there's a McDonald's across the street, that's a good place to put it. So, we had 5 existing concepts. That if a center had those 5 concepts, we were pretty confident that it was a good place for a restore.
What were those concepts? Like, what were those other concepts?
European Wax, Massage Envy, The Joint, Orange Theory, and then some major high-end grocery store like a Whole Foods, a Trader Joe's, you know, in the case of Texas, and HEB Plus, things like that. And so we wanted to be in what we call the fabric of people's lives, the places that they go on a regular basis. We didn't want to be, you know, in the medical center that was 5 miles off the beaten track or things like that. We're in class A, you know, high-end shopping centers for all of our locations. The vast majority of our locations are in Whole Foods shopping centers. So, you know, they're relatively straightforward choices. But behind those selections today, we do work with a retail analytics group, and we very carefully chart the territories. And it's actually not that we couldn't pick good territories without some of that, but what we couldn't do without that is maximize our presence across the country. So the difference between having really good retail analytics and following a game plan versus doing it, you know, by the seat of your pants is probably 30% more locations at the end of the day. And 30% more locations when you're opening well over 1,000 locations is massive amounts of enterprise value.
Well, did the data, I mean, when you started really looking at the data after you took sort of the Burger King approach, did it tell you different things? I mean, did it take some of the preconceived notions that you have and flip them on its head, or did it just confirm what you guys already thought you knew?
It confirmed what we intuitively knew, but if there were some surprises. Some surprises were, you know, number one, we could put restores closer together than we thought. And so you take a city like Austin, back in the beginning, we would have said that Austin was 5 or 6 restore locations. In the reality, now that we've done the hardcore analysis, Austin will be 18 locations.
Oh, that's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference. And so once again, the difference in enterprise value of our system using a real system to go locate locations, plot territories, find the right franchisees, it's massively different. And so far, it's been great that we have found that when we take over a city, there is a network effect. And because of that network effect, you can be a little closer than you thought. So, and we also used to worry about competition. We don't anymore.
Yeah, you guys are the leader in the space, really.
That's right. We're the leader in the space. We actually like for there to be some competition in the market. That way we don't have to build the market alone. And then people will self-select, and they'll self-select the location or the business that they feel the most comfortable with. You know, we have very nice locations. The interiors are very nice. Our staff is well-trained and fantastic. Typically, we always have a registered nurse in the location. Our marketing is better. And once again, this is not a knock on the mom and pop competitors or the smaller competitors that we compete with. It's just that we have achieved scale. We have a real marketing organization. We have a real training organization. Our real estate team is very sophisticated at this point. We've kind of crossed over from startup to established market leader. And, you know, we talk internally, we wake up every day thinking about three things. One of them is how we grow our market leadership. One of the things we think about is how do we create defensive barriers around our business? And there are several that make us different and hard to replicate. And then finally, how do we grow as fast as we can and manage it? You know, some businesses grow too fast. And, you know, I've seen just as many businesses fail because they grew too fast as businesses that didn't grow fast enough. So,
well, how do you do that? How do you figure that out? I mean, what's your thought process for growing just fast enough?
Yeah, just fast enough would probably be a term everyone at Restore would chuckle at, because we probably don't think about it like that.
Well, what I mean is like just fast enough, yeah, to where you go fast, but not too fast.
Yeah. You know, there's a little bit of a self-regulating thing in that you can only secure leases and build out spaces so quickly. But the reality of it is we've always tried to stay ahead of the curve. We forecast all the time. We know how much things are going to cost down to the penny. And we've gotten really good at marrying our financial capabilities with the demands of our franchisees. You know, we've sold well over 600 locations now that are all on development schedules and development agreements. So we know if we didn't do anything else in terms of sales, we know that in the next 4 years, we'll have close to 600 locations.
Oh, that's fantastic.
They're all committed and all part of development agreements.
And how many are open at this point?
We've got 80 open. We'll probably open order of magnitude around 100 this year. And then next year, our goal is to sort of amp that up a good bit and start to open 200-300 locations in a year.
So are you guys using franchise brokers to help with that in terms of like to help with the sale?
We are now. We didn't in the beginning. You know, we always have said we want to not be like a typical franchisor, which is not to say there's anything wrong with franchisors, but we've always thought of ourselves as more of a technology company that uses franchising as a way to get distribution and grow fast. So we've always thought about it a little differently. So we were slow to go to the broker networks. We also had incredible ability to sell the Restore concept without using the brokers, organically through a variety of channels, sure, that we are pretty tied to. So for instance, in the beginning, we only sold locations to military academy grads. And so we had deep roots at West Point and good roots at the Naval Academy. And those are fantastic people. They're some of the best and brightest that America has to offer. And they're great franchisees. And so when you can tap into something unique like that, you want to do it. Then we started tapping into our deep roots at the blue chip medical device companies like Stryker and J&J and Abbott. And once again, spread like wildfire, same type of thing.
What's the common thread there? Like, what's the common thread between the military folks and now when you get into the medical device companies?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, there's a screening that happens at both of those. So West Point's the hardest school in the country to get into. It's an engineering school. So you know that when you get a West Point grad, you've got someone that's smart. You've got someone that's been through something really hard and made it to the other side. And you know they follow orders pretty well because that's what they train you to do in the military. The similarities with things like, I mentioned Stryker, for instance. Stryker's one of the toughest medical device jobs to get in the country. They pay better than everybody else, but they also have a pretty unforgiving system. It's commission only. They hire all ex-athletes. It's super competitive. If you don't hit your numbers, you go to the loser's breakfast at the national conference and everyone else goes to the winner's breakfast. And so things like that don't work at every company. But if you want to go find badasses, you look for things like that. And we wanted to make sure that the foundation of the Restore system was super strong. If you have a strong foundation, building the rest of it is a whole lot easier. So we don't waste a lot of time with bad franchisees and incapable franchisees. A bad operator takes 20 times more effort than a good operator. Bad operators go slower. Bad operators don't open more locations. And so, you know, we wanted to get it right before we put the fuel on the fire. We do use the broker networks now, and they're great. They sort of supplement areas that we're having a hard time finding the right franchisee. They brought some really good prospects to us. We don't want to rely on them too much. It's obviously a more expensive channel, but it's a good supplement to the organic selling that we do.
How has Restore, the fast growth of Restore, you leading the helm? I know obviously with Steve, but I think you're involved more in the day-to-day, right?
Well, originally Steve was meant to be more a financial partner, and he was the chairman at Dream Adventures, still very active at Dream Adventures. About 2.5 years ago, Steve came on to Restore full-time. So Steve at Dreamit's the third most active investor in medical technology in the country. Sure. They've created billions of dollars of wealth. And Steve would say all the time, listen, I see thousands of ideas a year. And he was originally skeptical of Restore, but over time, as we got deeper and deeper into it, when I say skeptical, it wasn't that he was skeptical of Restore the idea, but he didn't know it could be as big an idea as it turned out that it could be. And once again, Steve and I are not in the world at this point to do lifestyle businesses. We're in the world to create, you know, society changing businesses, generational businesses. And so 2.5 years ago, he said, listen, I see these thousands of ideas year after year after year. I've never seen one that's got more potential than Restore. It's the right time, the right place. Everything points to, you know, a Restore being a successful company if run correctly. Coronavirus has certainly accentuated that. We were a hockey stick growth type company before coronavirus. We've been a hockey stick type growth company during coronavirus, and we'll be the same after coronavirus. And like I said, there are just a lot of things that have come together at the same time to indicate that Restore is a really, really big opportunity. And we're just scratching the surface right now. So we're super excited about what's to come.
Yeah. I mean, how have you grown as a leader? How have you been impacted, changed, or otherwise, you know, working, you know, from the get-go on this business? Now you're heading up a company that, as you said, you've got over 120 people now built into the infrastructure, you're scaling at a very high rate. What's that been like for you as a leader?
No, it's been great. I mean, you know, we've got 125 people at the corporate headquarters. We've got, you know, probably 400 in the corporate payroll. We've got close to 2,000 employees in the franchise system. And so what I have told my team, and I'm very open and transparent as a leader, is that we have officially crossed over in terms of having done something this big. I have not done something this big, so that's really interesting to me. I've done businesses about this size before, but every bit of growth we have from here on out, I'm in uncharted territory. But, you know, I like to think of myself as a good leader first. You know, I've certainly created decades of experience and a pedigree that put me in this position. You know, I was a former Army officer. I'm married to a West Point grad. Leadership is a part of our sort of existence in the world and our DNA. I worked at a lot of blue chip companies like the Kraft Foods of the world on Jell-O pudding and Cool Whip. I developed new brands for Coca-Cola. I ran a branding and communication group for Citibank. I started several of other companies, some that were successful, some that were not. I learned as much from the companies that weren't successful, much more from them than the ones that were, and had some high profile successes. I Go, You Go, once again, won a Webby Award as the top travel site in the U.S. You know, we're pretty proud of those kind of successes. And I'm, you know, I'm 52 years old now, so...
You're young, man. You're young.
Yeah, no, I definitely, I consider it young. And I think I'm a young 52, to be quite frank. I have a intellectual curiosity, a zest for life. I love surrounding myself with great people. At Restore, I've been able to surround myself with very, very passionate people that care about our mission, care about what we're doing for society. And you sort of take the super young, slightly inexperienced folks, but they'll run through walls and they'll do everything that they think needs to be done. And you put a real experienced team on top of that. And I would put our executive team up against any executive team in the country at this point, very pedigreed, have done lots of great things. And, you know, it's all of that is part of it. It's not just me. It's not just me and Steve. It's all about putting a good team in place. It's all about having a plan. It's all about executing that plan, having some fun along the way, being adaptable. You know, everyone's had to be a little bit adaptable the last year.
Sure. But,
you know, it doesn't feel like going to work for me. Like I said, I'm surrounded by great people. I'm surrounded by a lot of my friends that we've hired, people that I've known. So we have a good time. We love what we're doing for society. It's just easy to go to work and work your ass off when all of those things are in place.
Well, you know, one of my favorite sort of entrepreneurial evangelists and authors is Jim Collins.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jim Collins from, you know, Good to Great and all sorts of great books. One of the interesting things I found, and the thing I like about him so much, is that he writes from data. You know, there's lots of entrepreneurial books out there that are based off of, you know, theories. But he goes and finds data to back it up, you know, like he did in Good to Great and in many of his books, you know, Beyond Entrepreneurship and so forth. But here's the thing I find interesting, what you said earlier. You know, he said that as he studied CEOs and some of the most successful entrepreneurial CEOs who have grown big companies, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and all the others, you know, the Marriott, and you just go down the list. He said the big misnomer is that people, or the people who start, the entrepreneurs who start these companies, sometimes feel like, hey, I'm getting into a space that I'm not used to. I need to hand over the reins. And what his research has found is that actually most of the people who have built the great lasting, long-lasting companies are the very entrepreneurs who started them.
Yeah, it would be very odd for me to have the thought in my mind that I could hand this over to someone else and they would do a better job. They might have had more experience at bigger companies. They might have had more experience at different facets of building a company. But I fundamentally believe that the team we have today, the people we have today, Steve and I, we are unambiguously the best folks to build Restore into what it's capable of becoming. And like I said, I've got lots of entrepreneurial experiences. My life philosophy used to be that every 5 years I wanted to do something completely different. And that's what I've done. I've started different companies every 5 years. Now I'm in my fifth year at Restore, going on my sixth year. For the first time in my life, I don't want to do that because this particular company has so many different facets to it. We have a manufacturing plant in Europe for our equipment. Obviously, there's a retail component to this. There's a big technology component to it. You know, we're helping people with pain, and that's a noble endeavor in and of itself. But as we get into some of the deeper technology we're working on, we're going to literally be potentially adding years to people's lives, adding years to their health span. And, you know, I'm 52. So when I say I'm a youthful 52, I don't want to say that sort of intellectually. I want it to be true. I want it to be true because of what we're doing at Restore. I want it to be true because I am managing my telomeres and making sure that I'm doing all the right things with my body. I'm using all the modalities. So this is another one of those unique businesses in that it's not only mission-driven and great for society, it's just so relevant for us personally as we're aging. And I've got a 77-year-old father who's got stage 4 cancer. And I fundamentally believe it sucks and I'm close to my dad and I can get emotional about it pretty quickly. But I fundamentally believe that if I had started Restore 10 years earlier, I might have been able to make a difference. You know, it's just really great to be working on something that's so relevant for you. I've got young kids. I fundamentally believe that if I get them on the right path, sort of living the hyper wellness lifestyle, as we call it, that they have the potential to add decades of really quality living to their lives. Because the sooner you start doing these things, the bigger impact it has. So I wish I had started sooner.
Yeah, and I think we all think that, right? To a certain extent, it's always like, oh man, you wish you had done it sooner. But you know what the reality is, you did it just at the right time, and it's all proven out nicely. I was going to tell you, I mean, one of the silver linings, you know, for me through COVID has been, you know, all these years with work. I mean, you know, I've known you now several years, but all these years with work, it's been always been, hey, I know I wish I could, you know, have more control over my day, take more of a balanced approach. And the forced simplification of life through COVID has really forced that upon me. And it's been absolutely wonderful. I now have a regular workout regimen. I totally changed my diet. I'm down 28 pounds.
Wow, congratulations. That's great.
Yeah, but I feel great. You know what I mean? Like and I say to myself, damn, I wish I should have done this freaking 10 years ago. Like, why didn't I just do it? I knew that I used technology. I knew that I could work remotely, but it was just this forced simplification, but I'm very grateful for it. And grateful for the extra time with family and also focusing on, you know, with family, the idea of like, you know, you got to make your business and your life work for you. And I think that's a part of what, you know, Restore is all about too.
Yeah, that's right. We do a lot of things. I mentioned it briefly earlier, this notion of living the hyper wellness lifestyle. You know, we say do more as well, you know, Restore, do more. So between do more and the hyper wellness lifestyle, those mean very specific things to all the people at Restore. It's a different way of approaching life. It's much more proactive. It's taking care of the things you can control. It's looking at exercise, food, sleep. It's being connected to people, doing meaningful things. It's being outside. I mean, I could give you a very detailed explanation of it, but we've actually lived it the last year, and our company's been very different. We actually have been in the office since April. So there's 115 people in our office every day. We have been opening locations. We have been growing at a crazy speed. So, you know, ironically, we haven't had this sort of forced simplification during the last year. We've been running at full speed and doing things that people look at us sometimes and they have one of two sort of reactions. One is, wow, that's really cool. Come into your corporate headquarters is the first time I felt normal in a year. Or they have the reaction like, hey, what the hell are you doing? you know. But I'm very quick to say to the second group of people, listen, we're not cavalier about it. And we get the impact of coronavirus overall in society. But let me run a couple things by you. So number one, we live this hyper wellness lifestyle, so we're very proactive about our health and wellness and immunity. So I don't just say to my people, go out and prosper and run around. I give them high dose vitamin C, vitamin D drips. They use all of our modalities. And so we've probably had 50 employees that have had positive coronavirus episodes. And to the person, we've had zero bad events. The vast majority have been completely a non-event, very asymptomatic. And that's fine. That's what we feel your body's supposed to do. If you take care of your body and take care of what you can control, you're generally speaking going to do pretty well. And the second thing I say to them is, here's the problem. Take the word coronavirus out and put in the word diabetes, put in the word cancer, put in the word heart disease. All of the things that we're talking about with this hyper wellness lifestyle, it addresses all of those things. And so this isn't just a recipe for the last 12 months in the coronavirus time. It's the recipe for living the, you know, sort of highest potential life that you want to live. And we're unapologetic about that philosophy. It's worked really well. It works for our customers. It works for our employees, our families. But we're, like I said, I am then very quick to say, don't ever mistake that for thinking that we're cavalier about these things, because we're not. But we do also have one final thing I'll say about it is, going back to leadership, if we're going to have our stores open and our stores stayed open every bit of time during coronavirus, because we're an essential business, if we're going to have our employees working in the stores, how could we not have our corporate employees working at the office? It just didn't make sense to me to say to one portion of the employees, you go out and be in the public face to face with people every day, and we'll be in our homes away from everybody. And so
I understand that.
Yeah. And so we said, okay, great. Now that we're going to do both, let's go figure out how to take the best possible care of those people and not just throw our hands in the air and take it without controlling what we can control.
Well, listen, when you're next in Indianapolis, I'm going to take you again to St. Elmo so I can just see you devour some of that cocktail sauce again.
Okay. No, I love it. That's my favorite horseradish I've ever had. I love St. Elmo's. And listen, there's a reason to be up there really soon. We're opening in Carmel. We're opening Fishers. We're literally negotiating a development deal right now for up to 10 locations in Indianapolis. And so I'll be up there pretty regularly.
Text me when you come, and we'll go hit it up. My treat. But before we finish, thank you so much, by the way, for taking the time. And you're in the midst of travel and everything.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. I always appreciate people giving me the platform to talk about what we're doing.
Well, let me ask you one final question here, because, you know, I think it's really important. We're talking about scaling, and we're talking about, you know, obviously the scalability of franchise systems and that you're living through and experiencing and have experienced. For the emerging franchisors out there, for the entrepreneurs who are looking to achieve the same thing, looking back and looking forward, I mean, what is one, I know it's hard to limit it to just one thing, but what's sort of the mindset, or how do you help an entrepreneur with that mindset of really attacking the scalability of their business, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's a few basic principles. Number one, be data-driven. Number two, create an organization that will attract and retain really talented, hardworking people. I mean, I know that's a little cliche, but that is important. And then, you know, really work on process and process improvement and tools that are going to help you be more efficient and create more ability to complete things. So, you know, the way we do things today, you know, we use all kinds of enterprise level software. You know, Salesforce is our CRM tool in marketing, four or five other systems that are either communication tools, like a enterprise level LMS or learning management system, an enterprise level project management system. So you know, as you get bigger, continually work on process, continually add better tools that are going to allow you to get more efficiency out of your team. And not just efficiency, but the ability to repeat things that are the same again and again and again. Because that's the secret to franchising, I think. It's the ability to not only put a bunch of locations out there, but put them out there as efficiently as possible, put them out there in a way that you can support them as efficiently as possible, and then put them out there in a way that they all feel the same. And if you don't have systems, if you don't have process, and if you don't have good people behind systems and process, you're not going to create this sort of uniform system that feels the same no matter where you are in the country. And every time you have an exception, and exceptions are the thing that kill a good franchise system. When you have these exceptions, they take up so much extra time and effort. And so you got to get out of the exception business. You got to say, this is the way we do it. This is what our agreement looks like. This is the way our stores operate. This is the way we inspect them, audit them. This is the way we run a marketing plan. This is the playbook. And you follow that. And if you don't, we're going to find a way to get you out of our system.
If you want to learn more about this fast, fast, fast growing system, go to restore.com. That's RESTORE.com. Jim, I can't thank you enough, man. It's been awesome to watch you and the Restore franchise grow over these years. And really everything you shared has been really insightful, very valuable. And I just appreciate everything you do. So keep up the great work. And when you get to Indianapolis at some point in the near future, hit me up and we'll get together.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me. I'll see you in Indy soon. I'm going to force you to come in and freeze your butt off in one of our cryo chambers, get an IV and all that kind of good stuff.
I'm going to do it.
That's right. And then we'll head to St. Elmo's to celebrate after that. So thanks again, Josh. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care, man.
All right. You too. Talk to you soon.
Wow, what an awesome time speaking with Jim Donnelly and just taking in all that he has to offer in terms of what it takes to scale and grow a franchise. And in his case, doing it fast, but doing it the right way. I feel so fortunate through the course of this series to spend time with the likes of Tom Britt from Town Post Network and Jamie Isaacs from All Points PR, and now Jim Donnelly from Restore Franchising, to really kind of give you a full circle appreciation for what it really takes to grow and sustain a franchise business. I really do believe that that acronym DAMS, data, analysis, marketability, and scale, is really what it's all about. But it has to be done the right way. There are too many people out there. There are too many businesses out there selling a bunch of garbage that just doesn't work. You got to really trust the people who know what they're doing, who've been in the business a long time. I know I've certainly been in the franchise world on the legal side for about 13 years now out of the 15 years I've been practicing. But I love talking with these entrepreneurs and these franchisors who have done it themselves, who've built these systems from scratch. That's what it's all about. I would encourage you, if you just tuned into this episode, to go back to the last two episodes as well. You can find them at indyfranchiselaw.com. That's I-N-D-Y, franchiselaw.com. You can find it on Apple Podcasts or anywhere podcasts are listened to. But listen to episodes 1, 2, and 3 of this series on the enduring franchise system. That's going to give you the full circle approach to look at and to really digest and think about what it takes to put together and to build and to scale an enduring franchise system. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been an absolute blast to do one of these mini series, and I look forward to doing more in the future. Thanks so much. Take care. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of Franchise Euphoria. If you enjoyed it, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and review. It really helps to get this show out to more and more people. Also, if you have any questions, have ideas for guests or topics, please email me, Josh at indyfranchiselaw.com. That's Josh at indy, I-N-D-Y, franchiselaw.com. And finally, please note that this podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes and is not in any way, shape, or form meant to be any kind of legal advice. If you're seeking legal advice, please contact a lawyer. Have a great one. Happy franchising.